was a boy, I've been headstrong, always having me a sense of right and wrong.
In a nutshell, Detroit sucks.
Been here on YouTube for 14 years, just busting chops and grinding gears.
Time to listen up, you silly liberal fruitcakes.
You didn't make that shirt, you didn't build that.
4 years ago when things got dumb, I made me some calls and got me some money.
Yes, Lotto with Crowder has gone daily.
And since 2016 on election night, Mug Club has survived. And Mug Club can survive.
That's not going to happen.
And then last year when the Vox thing hit, they tried to make me a hypocrite.
Steven Crowder is YouTube's ideal creator. He makes cheap, long content.
Tried to cancel us by one decree from Fox, Universal, and NBC.
We were at 40,000 people watching on YouTube, and then ABC decided to hit us with a copyright strike.
They couldn't make us apologize, because Mug Club can't survive. Mug Club can't survive.
But you should respect women.
I'm sorry, I am a woman, so fuck you.
Read through Wojcicki's guidelines, must have read them 1,000 times.
And in the end, we decided that it was not violative of our policies for harassment.
When she said we abided by, and a Mug Club can survive.
This guy's a fascist, someone know that?
Mug Club can survive!
Is this Stephen Crowder?
Yeah! You want a piece of me for a long time.
Now I'll log into YouTube and what do I see? Once I scroll past Noah and Samantha Bee. My YouTube page is remonetized, cause Mug Club can survive. And Mug Club can survive.
I think you need to get out or we're gonna call the police.
Leave my restaurant or I'm calling the cops.
Soften us up. The YouTube's got them a new lap up.
Nope.
And y'all are in for a big surprise, cause Mug Club can survive.
You guys have papers?
We've been remonetized. Mug Club can survive.
You went for that.
Mug Club can survive.
I'm here to shut down your boy. You're here to shut me down.
Back on this
team.com.
See, this is what I do. I do this for you. I try and subject myself to the sippage because the ASMR freaks get really into it.
Do they?
And then, unfortunately, there was too much. Like with wine, you're supposed to bring air in with it, right?
It's called turling, though. It's not sipping.
Oh, well, that's affected.
Yes.
So my point is that I inhaled and I did it wrong. It went down the wrong pipe. Glad to be with you. It's the sound of Tuesday, I suppose. We'll be talking about a lot today. And Brian Stelter makes an appearance, as does Second Lunch.
Real journalist, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, Second Lunch.
Second Lunches.
Not quite Linner. Not quite Lunch. Don't even get me started on dinner. That's way, way,
supper.
Way. Dinner is right out. We're talking about second lunch. And then there's third lunch, and then there's dinner. And then there's a two mimosa brunch. But we're talking about that. But another thing that I really wanted to talk about is the opioid crisis. So first off, a lot of folks don't consider, again, the collateral damage, the unintended consequences of keeping the borders, you know, open or allowing more people, of course, to come into this country, record numbers. The fentanyl issue. Right. This is something we say that we're doing it out of empathy because people want to come to this country. They're not actually asylum seekers. They're just leaving a country that's crappier than the United States. That's it. That's not a reason to be able to enter here illegally. But that's a subject for another day. Fentanyl has increased dramatically. And unfortunately, that's been conflated with what has now been coined the opioid crisis. And I will tell you, it bothers me. Just hear me out. I have some unpopular opinions on this, especially having just gone through some major surgeries. There is a huge difference between street drugs and what people consider the opioid crisis, but it's a third rail that no politician wants to touch. So my question of the day is, first off, do you know anyone who has been affected by the opioid crisis? I'd like you to comment below. We'll read some of those comments here probably next week. I know some people who have been affected by it, not in the ways that you may think, and it's tragic. But then my question to you also is, what is your opinion on the prescriptions of opiates, of actual prescription opiates to people who are, you know, actually suffering from pain or have been through major surgery. So we'll be talking about that a little bit because I think the pendulum may have swung too far the other way. Before we get to any of that, oh, I should let you know, there's no show this Thursday. So I'm telling you, there's no show on Thursday for good reason, and I'll be in Michigan, Royal Oak. Those tickets are sold out, yeah. But the people in Royal Oak, we are going to see you this Saturday. No show Thursday. Every other day, though, if you miss a show and we have not told you, if you don't see it here on YouTube, go on over to Rumble, go to Mug Club. We're still streaming live Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Just because we're not here on YouTube doesn't mean that the show is not streaming. Nothing would make me happier than you guys leaving the tube that is you and going over to the Rumble. Because Rumble's bounce! All right, Gerald A. is here. How are you?
I am well, sir. How are you?
I'm okay.
Doing all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. Got a little bit of sleep, which was nice.
Well, that's every once in
it's
a while.
It's a rarity.
It is, yeah.
It's hard to come by.
As an but, especially.
By the way, he's addicted to opioids no, all the time, right now. No, he's just literally, when he walks, he sounds like Dan Maracas.
I did do the show one time on opioids.
Yes. Of course you did.
After surgery.
And by that, you mean you one time did a show not on opioids.
No, it was back surgery.
Yeah. Flip it.
You should just see what he does in the alleyway for a bottle of Percocet. And we have in third chair, Dave is not here with us today, but it is Porter Black Garrett.
Wait. It's not Black History Month.
No, I know. We just thought we'd do it for you.
Yeah.
With you, every month is Quarter Black History Month.
I see what you did there.
And you work, of course, now on the YouTube channel. He's not here anymore. We miss him, but Nerdrotic.
That's right. Nerdrotic.
Nerd.
And also, I have a YouTube channel.
Right.
Where I play video games and talk about movies. So.
Ah,
right.
Nice.
Yeah. For people who want to watch someone else
have that's right.
play video games.
You can watch me do
a lot.
It.
Do they pay you like to eat cheeseburgers, like the Tess Holliday stuff on webcam? Or like, yeah.
Like a mukbang.
Have you seen that?
That's what it's
You've
called.
Seen that, though, where like the people like the
I
the
try
big
not
ladies.
To see it. Oh, yeah, I'd like to avoid that.
Right. Well, cost. You know what? It's going to cost years of therapy. Also, lotofcutter.com/tour. We are going to be in Colorado Springs June 18th. There are still some shows left for the second show.
Tickets left.
Tulsa? I don't know if it's... I think it's kind of sold out. I don't want to... I think it's... Basically, it's sold out, Tulsa, so I apologize. But Colorado Springs, the second show. Go to lotofcutter.com/tour. We have a big fall tour that we'll be doing. But first, before any of this, time to react to something. New Jersey just created a new... what they refer to as model school instruction materials. I don't like where this is going. Oh, I have seen this video. They asked me to not watch, but I have seen this video.
What? I haven't.
So if you have children, they should leave the room, even though...
The house.
These materials...
Should leave the house.
They should leave the country. Even though the materials are designed to be presented to kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, again, the whole grooming thing is a conspiracy. So here's just one video from the amaze.org website. Again, if you have kids, they should leave because they'll just see this in their public schools.
Watching porn doesn't make you a bad person.
What?
It means you're curious. It's normal to want to know about sex and naked bodies. I mean, look at this guy's penis. Isn't it just unreal?
Yeah, we blurred it. Just
we blurred that.
Whoa!
What?
Hold on. Why is his Johnson so, large?
Wait, what are you talking about?
That's...
It's not that.
That is. What?
That's more of a you problem, Gerald. Okay.
Relative.
Here's another topic we're going to discuss. A college freshman. Just take the L. Last week, the University of Chicago. You comment below. Does that seem abnormal to me? That just seems like, yeah.
Listen.
Yeah, I mean, I have that problem.
Below average.
I have
almost
to worry about the being knocked back.
Yeah. And it just stick it up like a flagpole.
Yeah.
Sometimes you raise it up like at Poncho's.
Yeah, and at the end of the level, if Mario hits the top of it, you get double points.
Yep, that's right. Gerald.
That was for your nerdrotic people, the video game. Now
that's a little old school for them.
Last week, we're here we go to Brian Stelter, which I want him to be on the air forever. Please give him a lifetime contract, CNN.
On Lifetime.
And if not, we will give him a lifetime contract. We'll pay
second
you,
show.
CNN, just to host his show.
There you go.
We'll pay for the show. It's free airtime, and I'll pay for it.
We'll start a GoFundMe if we have to.
Yes.
We'll crowdfund this.
Keep Stelter on the
Stelter's
air.
Like, go me? Go fund me.
Fund. F-U-N-D.
Go fund me. Well, I guess.
I think he's still looking at that previous the little video we just watched.
I can just wire transfer it to the me, and, you know, it's
he's
just
like,
do I get to watch this every day?
Oh.
And by every day, I mean me in the mirror.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
really, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to start it this way, but we live in a horrible culture. So last week, the University of Chicago and the Atlantic, they hosted a quote disinformation and erosion of democracy conference.
It's ironic that they hosted it.
Boy, this is where I just
on the nose.
This is just really where I wish I could. I just did cocaine. It'd be easier to process this. And, of course, so it's the disinformation and erosion of democracy.
Was this in a panel about how to do that?
By the way, Chicago.
An instructor?
Yeah, Chicago.
How to.
Yeah. It should have been how to disinformation and erosion of democracy for dummies conference. And, of course, it featured CNN's heavyweight champion, Brian Stelter. I've been assuming he makes the cutoff weight, or he still has to cut. He has to spend some time in a sauna.
Yeah, that's true.
So a freshman student, Christopher Phillips, lobbed this final question to Stelter, and I think it's worth watching.
Hi, thank you for coming. My name is Christopher Phillips. I'm a first year at the college. My question is for Mr. Stelter. You've all spoken extensively about Fox News being a purveyor of disinformation. But CNN is right up there with them. They push the Russian collusion hoax. They push the Jussie Smollett hoax. They smear Justice Kavanaugh as a rapist. And
they
also smear
you,
Nick Salmon
Stelter,
as a white supremacist. And yes, they dismiss the Hunter Biden laptop affair as pure Russian disinformation. With mainstream corporate journalists becoming little more than apologists and cheerleaders for the regime, is it time to finally declare that the canon of journalistic ethics is dead or no longer operative? All the mistakes of the mainstream media and CNN in particular seem to magically all go in one direction. Are we expected to believe that this is all just some sort of random coincidence, or is there something else behind it?
It's too bad. It's time for lunch.
Of course it is.
You have 30 seconds.
No, I mean, there's a clock that says 30 seconds. Yeah. But I think my honest answer to you, and I'll come over and talk in more detail after this.
No, he doesn't.
Is that
when the cameras aren't looking at me.
I think you're describing a different channel than the one that I watch. But I understand that is a popular right-wing narrative about CNN. I think it's important when we talk about shared reality and democracy, all these networks, all these news outlets have to defend democracy. Mm-hmm. And when they screw up, admit it. Benjamin Hall, the Fox correspondent, was wounded in Ukraine.
Oh, you pivoted.
The news
crews
at CNN and the New York Times stopped what they were doing, and they tried to help. They tried to help them get out of the country. They tried to find the dead crew members. That's what
as
news outlets do.
As normal people would do.
That's how they actually do work together, to your question about sharing those kinds of connections.
Points to someone
trust.
Else. They're like, I didn't ask
a
question.
Yeah,
enough,
what are you talking about?
We don't share that
reality
about how that happens.
It's just
and
the
with
maid.
With regards to the regime, I think you mean the President Biden.
The President
last time
Biden?
I spoke with a Biden aide, we yelled at each other. So that's the reality of the news business that people don't see, that people don't hear.
That was just dirty talk.
They imagine that it's a situation that simply is not.
They were listening to Screamo.
But I think your question, it speaks to the failure of journalism to show our work and show the reality of how our profession operates. We have a lot of work to do, I think.
Okay, well, I've got a blinking red.
No applause.
I know, we can keep going, but there's lunch right out in the hallway.
I know, we've got it's lunchtime.
There's lunch right out in the hallway.
I can smell it. I'm flying to it.
By that, like he means cartoon. There's the craft table for everyone else and a trough labeled Stelter.
One of those giant full-body bibs.
Exactly.
Don't go baking my heart.
Don't get close to him. He gets aggressive when you get close to his food.
Oh gosh! Look, he ignores all of the claims. This is actually a perfect example of, you know, I hate to use the term mainstream media, legacy media, is they have a platform. They have a platform on television, and it's one way. You know what I mean? It's a one-way platform where there's no interaction, where they can just go on there and they can spout their information. And they get to ignore all of the actual claims, all of the actual criticisms, and they just act as though they don't exist. For example, we saw this at CNN with Cuomo and his brother. Only when there were actual legal ramifications did anything happen. And it's the same thing with Stelter right here. You're just seeing it happen in real time. He's so ill-equipped to deal with not even really accusations, just factual claims about inaccuracies in the media. What does he do? He ignores it. He points to the chambermaid saying, your question, okay? Your question? And then he uses the appeal to emotion fallacy, right? He's saying, well, journalists, they're still good because they don't let a fellow American from Fox, they didn't let him bleed out one time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
cool.
Good. I'm glad.
Well, why don't you answer the question like
so
we
you're
asked.
A human being.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you
that
very
one.
Much. Oh, and then you actually went the opposite direction. And oh, by the way, I yelled at someone too. It's like, see, okay, we help and then we yell, so we can't be bad.
Yeah.
Like, well, that didn't answer any of the questions.
And right away, he's scanning the room.
Yeah.
He's scanning the room for allies. Yeah, it's exactly. It's like Tom Hanks in Punchline. He's like, someone help me!
Help! He's like, allies, allies.
And even his ally on the right is like, you. Oh, okay,
Brian,
even for me,
answer.
That was pretty bad. Lunch?
We should all
He's
do
like,
better.
Lunch? Flop.
Brian, do you want to fix that? No, there's lunch.
There's lunch.
It's right out the hallway. I can smell it.
It's second lunch. He just, when they're calling in for lunch, it's just the Taco Bell, the gong, just dong.
By the way, I have a bit of an update for you. The guy who asked that question actually tweeted out, I just saw it before the show, and he said, it's been out for a little while, but I just saw it. He said that Brian did talk to him afterwards, but failed to answer any of his questions.
Of course.
Still.
Yeah, he just asked for his phone number. Now, you see him scanning the room for allies.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is also why we've been in legal battles to one degree or another with CNN, that's Turner Broadcasting, ABC, Disney, NBC Universal. I don't know if it's CBS, Vox, because what happens is once they get into the kinds of platforms, you know, we're like you guys do, there's two-way communication to some degree, they can't compete. And so then YouTube changes their algorithms to favor legacy media because they spend more money on advertising. They can't compete on the playing field, not only of ideas, but of quality of content. And so that's why they want more government control, regulation over YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, because they want to have an unfair playing field, just like big banks with never-ending bailouts. So anytime you look at the behemoths, you look at the Goliaths, you look at the mojos like Stelter, you do see people who you have to take into account that they're not looking out for your best interest. So he's scanning the room. Anyone going to help me? Who's going to help me? Let's contrast that with Stelter, the who's going to be my friend body posture in this clip.
Time to listen up, you silly liberal fruitcakes. I came out here, I wanted to tell some jokes. Let's do some reality checks here. You have any idea, sir, how pathetic it must be to be you? These people wanted to come out and have a good time, hear a few jokes, some thoughtful discussion, but your head pops off the pillow in the morning with, oh, how can I be a professional victim today? Let me go in and screw with their act just because, oh my God, your parents didn't tell you that your opinion wasn't worth that much. Look, they're confused. They're confused. You know why? Because I'm not your gender studies professor who has to cater to your trigger warning, microaggression, safe space bullshit.
Oh, well, that wasn't Brian Stelter.
Oh, that,
no,
that,
no.
You guys fit that one in.
That was the classic.
Thank you for subjecting me to having to watch myself.
No, Brian was in the audience. He was.
Yeah, yes, he was. Yeah.
He was eating, so he was happy, though.
Yeah.
So. Totally fine.
Trigger. That's the only time he's silent.
Yeah.
Is when he's gorging. Are you making fun of an immutable characteristic?
Nope.
No, it's an entirely mutable characteristic, just so you know.
By the way,
you can just get Richard Simmons' calorie counter and it would go a long way.
Mojo reference. That was okay. I mean, it's a bad Marvel character, but, you know, I got it.
Yeah.
As an evil.
Yeah.
It's a good Marvel character.
No. But a remarking, striking similarity to Brian Stelter. Hey, before we move on to it's birthday time.
Oh.
Hey.
For a super straight white cis hetero male who's, well, not necessarily white, Tokunawan's birthday. Happy birthday, Tokunawan.
Yeah.
Nah. Talented, man.
He was dancing earlier to that.
You get nothing.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
I just have one comment. Okay. That's hot.
That's hot.
A little teaser for later.
Yeah.
That's hot.
No.
I don't know what we'll be discussing on Mug Club, but I don't know if I'm going to
be scared now that that's the teaser.
Did you see? We showed the Village People, and he said, that's hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a narcissist. I was talking about myself.
Yeah.
No. He's like, what's worse, saying the Village People are hot or
playing the narcissist? Wait, the Village People were in that?
Yeah. The Village People. Yeah, you are the Village People.
You not see
He's
that?
Very focused.
The Village People are yours now. They belong to you. So here's another story before we get to the opioid crisis and the epidemic right now. Really, the problem is what's happening at the border with fentanyl. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you know this. The cartels not really looking out for your best interest. And the cartels, big fans of the Biden more open border policy.
For a super open border.
But before that, this is important. Last week, a man was arrested. I'm trying to think of how to. A man was arrested for servicing himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On a Southwest flight from Seattle to Phoenix, 4 times.
Southwest makes sense.
Well, no, for context, that's only a 2-hour, 48-minute flight.
Wow.
I think we actually have a picture of the man in question. We have the exclusive. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
No,
what is this?
He just backdoors it in with the asexual. That's not it at all. Let me read a quote for you. It says, the man in question is accused of masturbating 4 times in the seat next to a female passenger. The woman took pictures of the man while he was asleep and gave them to Phoenix police when she landed.
Wait.
I mean, she's lucky that she caught him when he was sleeping. I mean, after what,
he
a
had
20
time to sleep?
Yeah, after a 24-second refractory period.
Man.
That's so terrible.
He had time to sleep, guys.
Everything is connected. Guys. Just so you know, you can't have men beating women in NCAA swimming competitions and videos like you just saw being a part of a school curriculum and not expect serial masturbators on your JetBlue flights.
He just has flying anxiety, and this is the only way.
It's the only release he has.
Get some sleep.
His penis was his therapy dog. Look, it has a vest! Now, here's the thing. Of course, that guy should have been punched immediately. Just remember the Detroit fire crotch bomber? I don't know if you remember right when Barack Obama became president.
Fire there was crotch bomber?
There was a terrorist who tried to blow up Detroit, which is hysterical, by the way. And he had a bomb in his pants.
The underwear bomb.
Yeah, the underwear bomb.
I would blow up Detroit with my underwear.
And what happened is he only ended up blowing up his nether regions, and a black guy, he got punched in the face.
Oh.
This is a black guy. Was like, what? So he went, thought he was going to die in a blaze of glory for Allah, and instead he blew off his penis and was punched in the face.
Is he still alive?
I don't know.
Poor eunuch.
He could never show his face with ISIS again.
Oh my gosh. Just laugh him out of the room.
Strip off his patch. Wow. So
now he can be a female sports.
There you go.
Rules.
Exactly.
Surgery.
And you're Muslim.
He wouldn't be able to do the swimming points. Though. I mean, you can't trim the body hair enough. Too much drag.
Yeah.
Now, of course, look, I get it. This would be a traumatic experience for the lady, and we feel badly for her. Our heart goes out to her. But the woman has been gracious enough, the woman in question, to share her story with us. I believe we have her on deck, Skyping into the show here.
Oh, yeah, here she is.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
There she is.
Hi, Steven.
Hello. Hey, can you hear me? First off, we don't want you to be doxxed, but thank you for calling in. Where are you now?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I actually just boarded another flight, so I'm sorry for the noise, but I'm happy to share my story and maybe just like be a source of courage for other ladies out there who have also been seated next to masturbators. It's gross.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Can you tell us about that a little bit? Your incident.
Yes, yeah, of course. So I was flying from Seattle to Phoenix, and maybe like, I don't know, like 2 minutes into the flight, I start hearing this really weird, like, sound, and I, oh my God, guys, look,
What's going on? Is that the same guy? Is that the same guy from before?
That's the same guy. That's the same guy. Yeah, what? I'm not flying Southwest again.
Okay.
I'm only flying American from here on out.
Gross.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We'll pay for Spirit. Thank you for dealing. I appreciate it. Goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I feel uncomfortable.
Blanket so fast.
I don't know.
That's service right there.
So, ma'am, can I get a blanket, please? Cover myself
right away.
That better have been Economy Plus.
Ah, extra legroom.
Yeah.
It's true.
You know, otherwise, I get a toe cramp.
There are trade-offs.
I'm still amazed that he had time to sleep in a two-hour flight. Four times, and he slept.
Like a crazy. Like a baby.
That is some skills.
What in the world? Okay, so look, saying one time would have been like enough to blow mind, right?
That's enough.
But somebody sitting there. Four times.
If I say the words, if I play Bomberman on my cell phone, they ground the flight. Well, a guy can service himself four times, and
we're good. Keep going.
You don't at least get the air marshal to lock him in the bathroom.
Well, he was, in all fairness, still wearing his mask.
Oh, okay.
So it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Does it count as Mile High Club?
No, not with yourself, it doesn't.
No, I think at four times it crosses over.
Was this a dare? Like, was this a bet? Like, all right, I bet you could
do it three times, bro?
But you can't possibly do it four times.
You got 2.5 hours. How many can you crank out? Let's go.
And how much jail
guys,
time
you know what?
Comment
below. Wouldn't you just strike him as hard as you can?
Yes,
Can't we create a law? Like, we'll give you what we call the grace masturbation one time air.
No,
but time number two or three.
You gotta experiment. You never know.
Did the flight attendants come over and like, sir, excuse me, we're gonna have to ask you to stop. The fasten seatbelt sign is on.
Sir, would you like a Diet Coke or maybe some water? You're going to need
some
water.
That being said, if he grabbed his Juul, they would have kicked him off and grounded the flight.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So let's move on here
weird world.
We live in a sick world with sick people.
Sick.
Name that movie line. Also, smash the like button if you're watching on YouTube because that helps with the algorithm. Especially, you know what, if you want more Change My Minds like yesterday.
Yeah.
If we don't get 50,000 likes, I'll never do another Change My Mind as long as I live. There you
guys,
go. 50,000 likes.
You
hit it.
You.
Do it. I'll never do it again. I don't want to pressure you, threaten you, but
well, it sounds
them's the breaks.
Like you're doing threat, both.
A little bit of a threat.
So let's talk about the opioid crisis. And this is something that I've wanted to discuss for a while, and I know that I'm going to get crap for it.
Yeah.
So let me be very clear in separating the issue that we do have, that we need to address, that a huge portion of those in the swamp don't want to address because they want to conflate these issues and have more control over medical practitioners. So, and it goes back to the DEA. And this is important because a lot of people who are against the drug war, and I understand that, I agree. A lot of people who are pro legalizing all of marijuana, and I certainly think that it should be removed from the scheduled substance list and states should be able to do what they want with it. But a lot of these same people are then advocating for another drug war, only it's on prescription painkillers that are being given by physicians. And I think that that is a problem. I think it's a problem if you now give the government the authority to pressure physicians and pharmacies into not being able to provide care to people. And in some instances, opiates are appropriate. In some instances, I just want to be clear. That being said, we do have a serious problem right now going on. As discussed, I think we discussed it briefly last week, the Biden administration, they're ending the enforcement of Title 42,
right?
Which is during a health crisis, they're able to actually deport people, right? There are certain parameters that if they meet, it gives them more control over handling immigration at the border and being more stringent.
Yeah.
He decided, no, we're not going to do that.
No,
so
just getting
the daily arrivals at the border have tripled up to 18,000 per day.
Jeez.
Now, keep in mind, this comes at a time when seizure of fentanyl is already at record high. So there is a direct correlation. In 2019, we had 2,800 pounds of fentanyl. 2020, that went up to 4,800 pounds. 2021, that went up to 11,200 pounds. So you're basically talking about a doubling year over year. We don't have the 2022 numbers because, we only have half of the numbers. And of course, they make their killing during the holiday season.
It is a season.
Yeah.
I think we're already over 2020 numbers for this year.
I don't know the exact numbers. They're not fully reliable because they report end of year. And again, it's one of those businesses, you know, it's feast or famine. During the holiday season, it's the holiday season.
Well, and by the way, I just want to make sure we understand this. Like that little grain of rice of fentanyl is enough to kill you,
yes,
right?
It's enough to kill you.
Okay, so just making sure. Yeah.
A pound of fentanyl could kill all of Chicago.
Yeah, it took care of a big guy recently.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to remember. Seems like was in the news.
Yeah, something about I have no idea.
Yeah, it'll come to us.
There's a mural somewhere. So where does most of fentanyl come from in the United States? Take a wild guess. Huh? It's not a trick question. Look, I'm not doing this to try and trick you. There you go.
Speedy Gonzalez?
Arriba! On a slow news day, who would have thought that discussing something everything is on board with, fentanyl being bad on the street, is what gets us banned.
Well, no. You never knew.
So it mostly comes from Mexico. And it's mostly made in China.
Of course.
Keep in mind, the fiscal year of 2021, South Texas ports, they reported a 1,066% increase in fentanyl seizures. Those are just the seizures. So you now have the numbers of how much is being shipped across the border. You now have the numbers of the seizures that they've increased. And we have more references available, all available at LadderWithCrowder.com. And I would highly recommend today that you look at the references, because I'm going to hit you with some facts that most people don't know. Three key facts on the opioid crisis that may change your point of view on how it's been presented. And I will say Republicans have failed us just as badly as Democrats have, because it's one of those issues where it's for political clout. If anyone goes out there and says, we have to stop the opioid crisis, with these sort of general, these vague platitudes, people go, well, that's great. I know someone who was addicted to painkillers. Good. This person's going to stop it. Three key facts that may change your point of view. May not like to hear them. But first, let's start with fentanyl bad, drug cartels bad, open borders bad. We've had a dramatic increase in seizures just in Texas. In the last few months, there have been major busts all across the southern border.
Yeah.
The DEA has actually been working in Arizona, in this area of Arizona, for the past couple of months, addressing a surge in fentanyl drugs that have been found in this area. They say that all the drugs found in recent months could have saved, all the drugs rather that were found that we mentioned here earlier this week could have saved 700,000 lives.
This is not a recreational drug. This is death.
1.7 million fentanyl pills seized in a drug bust, the largest on record. It looks bigger here than in a grain of rice.
These drugs misform, and fentanyl, which is smaller than a bread basket for us, is what is driving our opioid crisis, not just in Arizona, not just in this region, but across the country.
So fentanyl related, they're getting so bad that the DEA actually sent a letter out to law enforcement agencies warning of mass overdose events. So you don't even need to join a cult anymore to just have mass overdose events. Fentanyl is killing Americans at an unprecedented rate. Tragically, many overdose victims have no idea that they are ingesting deadly fentanyl until it's too late.
Yeah, they're lacing it into cocaine.
Yeah.
That was one of the busts that we looked at.
Oh, man. Where do you get some of that? I just want to test it out.
But why would you do that?
I get it off the streets.
You just killed your clients.
Get it off the streets.
It's a bad business model. I mean, normally you kill them over time. This is doing it really quickly.
Well, I don't think so much as that they want to kill off their customer base, just their not very good at math. It's made in China, but it comes through Mexico. There's a middleman who's not doing, he's not carrying the one.
They're not cutting it right.
Right.
Uno.
Yeah. So 2021, there's a record number. What was it? 100 and, I'm almost as unprofessional. Yeah. Sir, I'm looking down at this is my prompter. So I look down at my iPad to make sure I have the numbers right. She's sitting there. She's like, and there have been 10.
I gotta scroll. I gotta find it. It's
9
here somewhere.
Journalism is dying because of Trump. So 2021, a record. Just do your research. Just have the number at your. Have you seen us do a Change My Mind? I have to remember so much crap.
Yeah.
105,000 people died of drug overdoses in 2021. Most of which involved fentanyl. For example, in Milwaukee, I guess all of Milwaukee County, they set a record for ODs. 80% involved fentanyl.
Jeez.
And last year, this shouldn't be surprising, but this is just for, you know, if you're watching and you're a liberal, you're a leftist, and you still think that COVID is the, I'm not allowed to say what it is. Still think COVID's a thing. Meaning a thing as far as an actual threat right now. In the Bay Area, more people died of fentanyl overdoses than COVID. Also died from hate crime attacks against Asians than COVID.
Yeah, that's a rise.
It's terrible.
Also, more people died from toasters than COVID.
Ah, vending machines falling on people. Just falling.
Those last two I can't substantiate. But definitely more people died from fentanyl than from COVID. And fentanyl's gotten so bad in San Francisco that it's become now a part of just the tourist experience.
These mothers have a message, and they want everyone to read it. So it's writ large in billboard form, looming over Union Square. It says, famous the world over for our brains, beauty, and now dirt cheap fentanyl.
We're frustrated, and that's why we're doing this.
It's bad,
we're putting pressure where we think it might be helpful.
Pressure because they want what they call the open-air drug markets shut down. Jackie's son is a fentanyl addict on the streets of San Francisco. So is Corey's. And so are dozens of their son's friends.
Gotta love lawless
cities.
There's
Tyler, there's Kyle, there's George, there's Chris, there's Sarah.
Ringo?
The list goes on. They all wish they had their mother come to see them.
The problem, they say, fentanyl is too affordable and too available.
Get them.
It's just specific
right
here because people can come here all over
it's on the
and
street,
get
right
dirty
there. Get
and not get no consequences here.
She's like, why don't you just get him? Just like the Southwest masturbator.
Go get him.
He's the Southwest masturbator. He's buckled.
he's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere.
He can't get anywhere. Come on.
So, okay. We've gone through fentanyl. All right. So you understand that now. And that's a real problem. And yes, they're lacing a lot of things with fentanyl because it's cheap. It increases the high. It's something that you can't, really monitor because it is so potent, and you don't know what street drugs are incorporating fentanyl. Yeah. Now, that brings me to something. And again, my question to you guys was question of the day. What is your opinion on prescription opioids, and how have you perceived the opioid crisis? Fentanyl is a crisis. The drugs coming over the Mexican border are a crisis. Okay, I just want to be clear about all of this. But what you think is the opioid crisis, for example, how it was presented in the show Dope Sick, and it made me sick to watch just the dishonesty that was taking place. What you probably believe to be the opioid is not the actual opioid crisis. So we've heard about this everywhere in the media and even from politicians, the opioid crisis ad nauseum.
I'm an emergency physician, and I'm going to talk to you today about the opioid epidemic.
Last night, we told you how the risk of dying from an opioid overdose is now greater than dying in a car crash.
But in 2016, there were 42,000 opioid-related overdose deaths. That is 115 overdose deaths every day.
But also important for the country to see that the opioid crisis affects everyone, even Michael Keaton, even one of the biggest stars in the world.
Okay, so let me present this to you in a way that maybe is as, let me be as reductive as possible, and then I'll substantiate it with some other facts and some clips. Many of you believe that the opioid crisis, and this is how politicians have presented it on both the left and the right in the media, is little Johnny went in for a toothache, mm-hmm. he got some Vicodin, and then he got hooked on opioids, and then it leads to an overdose. And we had, doctors were just prescribing opioids left and right, and people are now dying in record numbers of opioids. I'm going to give you three key facts that tell you the opposite is true. And I just want you to think about this for a second. Does this change your point of view? I'll go through them, but okay. The facts that you need to know. Opioid deaths have skyrocketed since prescribing has gone down dramatically. Nearly all opioid deaths that are taking place are from illegal drugs like fentanyl, like heroin, and the vast majority of people who even did abuse prescription opioids were people who already had long storied histories of drug abuse. Those three facts, does that present a little bit of a different picture? And especially to people out there who are against the drug war, is there an appropriate place for opioids? And just so you know, the difference is basically opiate means the sort of naturally occurring, and opioid is a synthesized version, but I'm going to use them relatively interchangeably because the media has irresponsibly. Those three key facts, the vast majority of deaths right now, the opioid crisis, are fentanyl and street drugs. It's only increased as prescribing has gone down, and the people who abused the prescriptions were not just people who walked in and happened to get painkillers. These were people who were seeking out painkillers because they had a drug addiction problem to begin with. Now, if you know those three facts, does that mean we need to stop all opioid prescriptions? Because I also know many people who, for example, I know someone who's been in a car wreck, who will never be without pain for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And now they've been turned into what would be, they actually have a good doctor who's like, well, I don't care what the DA wants to do, but they would be turned into a street drug addict. So if you're against the drug war because you're saying then people will get it on the street, we don't want to falsely present what the opioid crisis is. So let's go first through those key kind of claims, and I'll explain to you why they're incorrect. The first claim you hear a lot is the opioid crisis is a result of what? Doctors overprescribing the drugs.
addicted to a combination of prescription drugs for 7 years. One woman says her doctor helped get her hooked.
To investigator Pam Zechman reports the state is cracking down on doctors who use their medical license as a license to deal.
Whether it's wisdom teeth or a C-section, overprescribing opioid medications to control pain after surgery has fueled the opioid crisis.
For so many opioid addicts in this country, the addiction begins with a prescription from a doctor. One of the most important ways to slow down this epidemic is to slow down those prescriptions.
Look, everyone has been touched by this to one degree or another, right? Overdose or just someone with a drug problem. But what they just said isn't true. I know that people, I don't work for Big Pharma. I don't have a sponsorship from Pfizer like Stephen Colbert. It's just, that's not
true. Break into song.
Right, yeah.
Pfizer.
Needles. We didn't write any other lyrics. Just buy Pfizer, buy Pfizer, buy Pfizer, buy Pfizer, and sketch. So first, the vast majority of overdose deaths, they come from illicit street drugs, fentanyl and heroin. Okay? They're not coming from prescription painkillers. Just to be clear. And also, the DEA is not even being accurate in how they track opioid deaths. It's sort of like death with COVID is just COVID death.
Oh, yeah.
Someone could have 15 drugs in their system. Like, yeah. Yes. So here's another one. Opioid deaths, like I just said, they've actually skyrocketed. Skyrocketed. And that's true. They have skyrocketed. As prescribing has taken a nosedive.
Wow.
Well, it's almost like the gun issue, right? Mm. So you say criminals have guns and they kill people. Then, okay, let's take the guns away from society.
Right.
Yeah. And it doesn't work that way because the criminals still have the guns.
Right.
You're doing the exact same thing with opioids. You're saying doctors can't prescribe them to people that have actual medical reasons.
Yeah.
And a prescription is a specific way to use the drug.
Right.
And then
people abuse it.
You're taking it away from them. It's not going to take it away from the criminals that are on the streets in San Francisco. It turns people
into criminals because there's like, well, I've got a shattered hip and I have a broken face.
Right.
You know, a chimpanzee ripped off my face on a red wine and Xanax bender.
Bubbles.
And my doctor is afraid of the DEA, so they go to the street to get some kind of a pain relief. By the way, these same people who are often pro-legalization of marijuana, they are the same states that want to ban kratom, which is a tea that has naturally occurring opiate agonists. So, and again, I'm not encouraging people out there to go use any type of supplement or medication. That's not what this is about. But as prescribing has gone down, the deaths have gone up, to be very, very clear. And another thing, like I just said, but the references are available. I'll expand upon this a little bit. The vast majority of people who did use the prescription drugs, they already had extensive drug histories. You've heard of doctor shopping.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the people who were abusing a prescribed drug, they were doctor shopping. Now, let me give some credence to the fact that late 1990s, early aughts, there was an overprescription problem, specifically of a drug, OxyContin.
Yeah.
Okay. And this was, people just like to blame Purdue Pharma. Now, they were dicks, kind of like Pfizer, AstraZeneca. I'm far from me to trust, Big Pharma carte blanche. But Purdue, what they did was they actually got the FDA to create a label based on inaccurate or incomplete research that said OxyContin, which is just a time-released form of oxycodone, which is very common, right? Percocet is oxycodone. You can get oxycodone in a multitude of ways. OxyContin said, since ours is time-released, it's less addictive than other opiates. Doctors before that all knew that there was addictive potential to opiates, and so they were very careful in prescribing them, and they would taper people down. What happened is one company in bed with the FDA got an inaccurate label, and so there was an overprescribing problem. Okay, sales grew from 48 million, I think, in 1996 to 1.8 billion by 2000.
That's a bit of growth.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's prescribing pills. By the way, 80 milligram pills is what they were up to prescribing. When I had surgery on my back, I think they gave me 10 milligram pills.
Was it OxyContin or was it? No, it was like Percocet.
It was something. I don't remember exactly.
I don't think they prescribe OxyContin anymore.
Norco. It was like Narco or something.
Norco is, that's hydrocodone. That's like a Vicodin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that, I think this is a little higher.
Well, it's because it's supposed to be time release. So if it's 80, that's supposed to be 20 milligrams and it's released slowly. The problem is they didn't really take into account that people would crush it, snort it. Again, that's the problem with the pill. People were crushing it, snorting it, getting rid of the time release. Again, you can blame the company and you can blame the FDA for creating a label saying there's little to no addictive potential. And if you've watched Dope Sick, you know this story, but they just sort of skim over the fact that the FDA did it. They're like, oh, it was just Purdue lied to them. Well, isn't that the job of the FDA to make sure they're not lied to? Their only legitimate purpose should be to tell
job.
you. Yeah, it should
one,
be to inform you of the
job.
Risk. If you believe in complete drug legalization, meaning you don't believe in the drug war at all, right? You're anti-abolitionist. If that's your point of view, that the FDA's only job should be to let you know what's on the label. That's what I believe.
Yeah.
In other words, I don't think the FDA should be able to tell you, well, you can't take this because it hasn't gone through our process. They just need to be able to inform you as to the risks. That's their job. That's how they protect you, not to be a babysitter. So after this, what happened is the DEA went after not just doctors, pharmacists in 2011. Hmm. They arrested over 22 doctors. Jeez. There were 40 pill mills, is the term that's been used, that were closed. Now, I'll tell you this, too. This is something that I experienced recently. I went through a major surgery. I think we have some just B-roll from...
Oh, my God.
That's not me. I can't show my actual surgery.
Oh, damn.
This is just the general procedure that I went through, where they actually, you know, they went in, they had to turn my rib cage around and put in... three titanium rods.
Sick. That last part where they turn it upside down.
Yeah.
It's like it could probably cause some.
I might be able to get the actual footage of my surgery at some point.
Put your hand up. I just want to see. Come on, pull them out. Like, I want to see it.
What?
Come on, you got the titanium in your chest and not in your hands? Come on, let's go.
I know.
A little Wolverine.
I asked for the adamantium, but my insurance wouldn't cover it.
Schnicked.
That's an upgrade.
Yeah. Something about a deductible. So, that happened. Okay. And then I ended up in the emergency room. And overnight, because what happened is, and this was my fault, I pushed too hard too quickly to try and come back to work, where they had to, I don't know if you call this a surgery, but certainly another operation. They had to drain about a gallon and a half of fluid for my lungs collapsed. Yeah. I think this is something that you guys can actually, and I warn you, if you're squeamish, maybe, I don't know when a needle becomes a pipe. This is going through the back of my rib. So what you're seeing is has to go through the back of my rib all the way to the front of the lung area to drain my thoracic cavity. Here you go.
Lots of pressure.
That's not pressure. I don't want to see that.
Look, it looks like it's a disappearing trick, like a knife. That's like a fake knife that you stab. Watch. That whole thing is about to go in. Watch.
Ow, fudge.
But you see me trying to fight off the choke at the same time trying to pop
it. That was the last day of fluid.
Oh.
3 days.
Gosh.
And the reason why was because there was so much fluid that built up that after the first day they removed too much. And I was like a noodle because it creates this pressure in your body cavity that you get used to. So, that happened and it was very unpleasant. And again, this is why I would advise to everyone, listen to your doctor's advice. They told, it's partially their fault.
Doctors can get
it's entirely
wrong.
It's entirely my fault.
It's 100%
it's entirely
your fault.
My fault.
I was talking to you during the people that time at Mayo, stop walking around.
The people at Mayo Clinic were unbelievable. If you ever have something wrong with you, go to Mayo. There's nothing even close. But what happened is they told me, I said, how long until I can start, you know, like working? They said 12 weeks before you even look at working. I said, okay, how long before I start walking? I said,
you're like, what about three?
Yeah. I did it. I think I did it in eight and
it's
came back and says, hope you like those shows. So I said, I said, how long before I can walk? They said, you can walk like probably, you know, as soon as you leave the hospital, a couple of days. Then they call me to check up on me. They go, how are you doing? I go, I'm getting pretty, you know, tired. Like when I was at Costco, I had to sit down. And they go, what, you were at Costco?
Like, wait a second.
Are you out of your mind? I said, you said I could walk. They said, we went from like the bathroom to the kitchen. You were at Costco?
I walked.
Were you by yourself? I was like, I got a cart. So.
Those huge carts.
I tore some stuff and it created fluid. But here's my point. Went through that, what you saw, that major surgery, then ended up in the emergency room. 7 days of prescription painkillers.
Ah.
7 days. Nowhere throughout the history of mankind, going back to the shootist days with John Wayne and Gregory Peck, would they give you tincture of opium for just 7 days? It typical would be a couple of months because, you know, I wasn't even able to prop myself up on my bed.
Yeah.
And just for reference, you can actually see here, hair follicle testing that I did within 90 days of having been in the ICU, and it came back Mormon, as you can see. Because I wasn't able to take anything.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is, do I think that was more productive? I was just in excruciating pain for a very long time.
Well, you had to travel too, and that was one of the reasons. And then people are so scared to prescribe this because of all the information that's out there and all of the focus from the DEA that they are like, no, you have to come in. We have to go through a whole thing. It's like, look, can you just call Mayo? They will tell you I had this surgery 7 days ago. Please, I'm just in pain.
Yeah.
Right? That's a reasonable thing to be.
And they did. They did. Mayo did go. And then doctors like, well, we're just afraid because if we didn't perform the surgery, you know, the DEA will be on our ass. And I'm like, can you see I'm not faking it? Can you see
holes
the
scars?
I'm not. This is almost a year removed. Let alone I have a pock mark on my back.
Oh.
From that. They're like, what did you have? Do you have body acne? No, they put a metal pipe. They put a Super Mario sewer in my back.
Sick.
And my point here is I've experienced this personally, but you did, you obviously, I and did, you on yeah. the flip side, you did say that you took some painkillers.
I did, yeah. And it made me feel like I'd always had back pain and like difficulty sleeping. And so when I would take this, it actually, after surgery, I was like, oh man, I can actually sleep and rest. It was really, really nice right. to be able to do that. Yeah. And then I realized that I was supposed to be tapering down a little faster based on what we wanted to do, not my doctor's recommendations.
Right.
And then I was like, I actually started like not telling my wife that I was taking more. I was like, no, I'm tapering down to like half. And I was actually taking a full pill.
Yeah.
And then I told her, I was like, hey, I think I need to stop. Just like a week later. Like,
wait a second. Yeah, this might be a
she's
problem.
Like, wait, Gerald, are you on pain pills again?
No, she was just encouraging me like, hey, those are addictive.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not.
So, so happy, right?
Why are you listening? Why are you listening to Pink Floyd? I don't know.
It just makes so much sense to me now. Yeah. No, I actually cut completely off, and I started having like some jitters and some other stuff. Like I was going through withdrawal symptoms, and she noticed it because she's obviously this incredible nurse. And she goes, "Hey, you can't go completely off. You have to kind of step down." And so I did over the next like week and a half, 2 weeks, and it was fine. But I could very easily have seen like, man, this makes me sleep so much better without that pain. And it wasn't just surgical pain; it was just uncomfortable.
Well, doctors can be like you said. It's on you that you. Tapered off. It wasn't the doctors. Doctors can be careless, kind of.
Yeah.
My grandfather, he had chronic severe back pain for basically his whole life, and they were giving him so much narcotics and opioids to deal with it. And then whenever this kind of came around, whenever everybody started turning around and saying, "No, we're not going to give you this anymore," they started treating him like a crackhead.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you put him in this situation,
and let me guess,
by saying, "Hey, take all these pills." For a long time and not taper off.
Your body gets used to it.
And then whenever you decide, oh, well, you know, we're not going to give it to you because you're a crackhead and you just all you want is opioids. It's like, well, he's 88 and he has a severe back problem and you've been doing this to him for 20 years. So, like, what are you going to do?
Let me guess. Still has back pain.
Still has back pain.
So that's the problem is does he live the rest of his golden years in pain? Or, you know what, do you provide some relief? I do think that there is a relief approach to doctors, especially if you're in your 80s or 90s. I would just do all
whatever
the drugs and steal stuff.
Yeah. Let's get actual crack in here.
Yeah, it's like if you're like you're a drug
going
addict.
Out in style.
Well, it's because of you. But here's what I do want to say, and I'll leave you with this. We're about to go to Mug Club. Is we need to separate, I think, in this country. And let me know if any of this has changed your opinion. I'm not going out here saying that everyone should be taking opioids, and I'm not saying that doctors should be overprescribing them. But I do think we need to separate addiction, physical dependence, and habit. They're different things. Someone can be physically dependent on something, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they're an addict. For example, if someone has a shattered spine, and they have a choice of lifelong pain or pain management. I think that pain management should be an option. And you obviously should, too, if you think, by the way, marijuana is not going to work for that. Marijuana will work for neuropathic pain. It doesn't work for that kind of pain that's actual tissue damage. I believe that CBD and low amounts of THC, yes, there is medical legitimacy. There are certain uses, of course. But someone like that, it's not going to fix it. So
you're telling me there's a chance.
They're telling you there's a chance. Get granddaddy Thunderscrew. Yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah.
What's the dosage? I don't know. Just smoke this.
Whatever you want.
See what happens. So we need to separate between addiction, physical dependence, and habit. These are different things. And again, the final three facts. You believe that there's an opioid crisis. Now, there is a problem right now with drug overdose deaths. And the reason that the left certainly wants to make you think that it's the doctor problem is because they don't want to acknowledge what's happening in the border. And the reason people on the right don't want to actually address the problem is because this does affect a lot of red states. For example, there are a lot of red states where people are in rural areas and they do have drug problems. Fentanyl has ravaged these areas. But the three key facts you need to know, I want you right now to picture in your mind what you believe the opioid crisis to be. Someone went in, was given painkillers unbeknownst to them, then they became an addict, then they died. The three key facts to know. Almost all the deaths come from illicit street drugs. Fentanyl and heroin. They're coming over the border from Mexico, largely made in China. As prescribing has gone down, like you just discussed, and like I experienced, because doctors are afraid to, deaths have gone up dramatically, and the people who actually did abuse prescription painkillers were drug abusers, by and large. They had a long history of abusing substances and they were doctor shopping. So understanding all of that, do we think it's responsible to just throw out the term opioid crisis and crack down on doctors and pharmacies so that they can't provide this medication when appropriate to people who need it. I actually think that it's cruelty. I think that it's medical malpractice. And I think if you're going to say end the drug war, we need to take a balanced approach to all of it. And we've gone too far the other way. But that's just my opinion. I know a lot of people are going to be pissed off. You let me know what you think. Smash the like button. Yeah. Garrett with Nerd Roddick. Thank you so much, Quarterback Garrett, for being here.
I miss you guys.
We're going to Mug Club. Piss off YouTube.